Morning.
Morning.
Thank you. Was it because Mike was standing so close to me that I sounded so good? Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so good to see all those smiling faces. I want to start off with a couple of different scriptures. The first one, please forgive me, I'm going to take out of context. Now, that means that I'm going to take it where I don't know that Jesus expected me to take it. But it does illustrate the point of my lesson, and that comes from Luke chapter 14. And it's two different verses. They're separated here. In verse 28, Jesus said, "Which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it?" And then in verse 31, Jesus said, "Or what king, going to make war against another king, does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000. Now, this lesson is all about counting the cost. And that parable of Jesus was about counting the cost. But I want to look at it in light of Mark chapter 8. In Mark chapter 8, Jesus talked about the value of a soul. He said in verses 36 and 37, "What'll it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" Now I want to paraphrase that statement and make it a little bit more personal. What will it profit you if you gain the whole world and lose your soul? Or what will you give in exchange for your soul? Now, it sounds a little bit different when it's aimed directly at you or at me. And I understand that. I want to spend a few moments this morning looking at the value of or the worth of a soul. And then at the tail end, we're going to look at the possible loss of a soul. And of course, those souls are going to be yours and they're going to be mine. First, the worth of a soul. How do we decide how valuable something is? Well, there are an awful lot of different ways of looking at it. The first way that we decide how valuable something is its creator. Now, I knew about this guy, but I didn't know enough. And so Sarah and I were on our way home from a wedding on Friday evening, and so she, you know, aren't these telephones, aren't they exciting? I've only had my smartphone, and no, I didn't have to get somebody to work it for me. On the way home from that wedding, and she looked this guy's name up. His name is Antonio Stradivarius. Have you ever heard of Mr. Stradivarius? He was a maker of stringed instruments. He was Italian. He lived in the mid-1700s. He made violins, violas, not violas, but violas, cellos, and harps. And those instruments are worth umpteen amount of money. Sarah, like I said, looked this up on my phone, and just within the last whatever, one of his violins, like I said, only 250 years old, sold for over $2 million. One of his violas, which is a little bit bigger than a violin, recently sold for $60 million. Now, I don't reckon there's a single country music video where the violin player or the fiddle player plays one of Mr. Stradivarius' instruments. That just blew me away when I heard $60 million. And the poor man's dead. He's not getting any of this money. It's all those collectors. I don't know exactly why they're worth that much. They say they're made out of the best wood. He was the best craftsman. They produce the best tones. Whatever it is, Mr. Stradivarius's, and they call them Strads, by the way, his instruments are worth so much money. And it's because of who made it. It was who made those instruments that made them valuable. Now think about it just for a minute. Who made your soul? Well, obviously, it was God. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, Solomon, writing about the end time, said, "Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it." Your soul was made by the exact same person who made the earth, the moon, the stars, the trees and the birds and the fish and the seas. God created your soul, and that's what makes it, or part of what makes it, valuable. How do we decide how valuable something is? The law of supply and demand. Now, I want to relate this to something that affects all of us. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, gas was down around $2.20. But in the last, like I said, 2 weeks, it's gone up to about $2.50. You know, isn't it interesting how slowly it drops, but how quick it jumps back up? Well, that has to do with the law of supply and demand. You know, when that hurricane hit the Gulf Coast, they had to close down an awful lot of those oil wells out there in the Gulf of Mexico, and that meant they wouldn't be shipping oil back to the United States. But there's still the same amount of demand. You're not going to cut down on driving your car, and I've got to make sure I make it to the church building 3 or 4 or 5 days a week. You know, we don't cut down on our demand. It's all about the supply chain being cut. You know, and now you think about that in relation to your soul. How much is your soul worth? Well, think about how much it was worth to God. You know, in that one of the most famous passages in the Bible, it says, "For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son." And I'll stop right there. Okay, because that's what I want to hit. How much is your soul worth to God? He gave Jesus life. He allowed Jesus to die on that cross when He could have done something about it, but He didn't. And Jesus was willing to go to the cross and die for you when He could have called 10,000 angels or 12 legions of angels, as we looked this past Wednesday night, to get Him down off that cross. That shows how much your soul is worth, the law of supply and demand. How do we figure out how much something's worth? Well, how long's that something or other gonna last? Think about your house. You know, if you wanted to buy a real cheap house, and there are real cheap houses out there, you could go out there and you could find one that's just about to fall down. But how long would it last? Not very long. Now, if you wanted to make it last a long time, not only would you have to invest the money on the front end, but you'd either have to hire a contractor, or you'd have to put in a whole bunch of sweat equity, and you'd have to pay Lowe's or one of the other hardware stores in town for a whole bunch of lumber and a whole bunch of stuff. Regardless, when you have a house, how long is it going to last? You know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, maybe 100 years? I don't know. Depends on how well you take care of it. What about a car? A car is going to last you 5, 10, 15 years. You know, when it gets to be 25 years old, it's a what? It's an antique. At least that's what they call it. I can't imagine something that was made in 1994 being an antique, but that's what they call them in cars. If you don't take care of it, it's going to go bad quicker than that. Think about a computer. Computers have built-in obsolescence. They wear out before they wear out. You can buy a computer today and it'll last you for 10, 15, 20, 25 years. But you won't be able to do anything with it because it wears out. Built-in obsolescence. But then, think about this. How long is your soul going to last? Well, I don't think I have to tell you that. When your mother and father came together, they along with God created a soul that was going to last how long? Forever. In Daniel chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, "At that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. There shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time your people will be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever." Your soul was created on the day that you were conceived, and it will never go out of existence. That makes it very, very valuable. How do we decide how much something's worth or how valuable it is? Well, think about the potential of that item. I can remember, it doesn't seem like that long ago until I really think about it. It was the early part of this month, only it was 21 years ago. It was July the 2nd. Tracy and I had gone to Murfreesboro. She had a doctor's appointment. She was due on the 9th, the following week. We went into that doctor's appointment, and I sat down in the lobby, and I think I picked up a Sports Illustrated, and I was reading through it. Tracy had gone on back to the back to see Dr. Witt. All of a sudden, there was a hand on my shoulder, and I looked up. It was Dr. Witt. He said, "You need to get Tracy to the hospital." I said, "What?" She said, "You need to take her right now." And I said, "What?" He said, "Come on, I'll show you the back way out of here. You need to get her to the hospital." And 45 minutes later, I was holding a little, when he was that size, we called him a bundle of joy. Okay, I was holding William. Now you think about the potential of a child. And that's the same potential that you have of a human soul. There is so much potential. You think about it in these little children that are here today. And there's so much potential in a human soul. You think about the potential in your soul, and that shows you how much value it has. How do we decide how valuable something is? Well, think about rarity. You know, how rare an item is. We were on our way to Arkansas week four last, and Grady's going to school. He'll be leaving here in about 3 or 4 weeks. And I pointed out to him, I said, "You see that license plate in front of us?" It was an Arkansas tag. I said, "You see what's in the middle of that license plate?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "What is it?" And he said, "It's a diamond." He said, "Dad, why is there a diamond on an Arkansas license plate?" You know, there's something you can find in Arkansas you can't find in any other state in the Union. Now, I'm not sure about Alaska, but there is a state park in the west part of Arkansas. It's called the Crater of Diamonds State Park. And you can go in there in the morning and you can dig to your heart's content. And if you find a diamond or a crystal or whatever, you can carry it out with you. It's the only place, like I said, I'm not sure about Alaska, where you can go and get a diamond. Now, why are diamonds so valuable? Because they're so rare. You don't find them on a street corner. You don't find them just looking down and picking one up out of the dirt. You got to go hunting for them, or you have to go and buy one. You know, while we're at it, you can explain to me why a woman's best friend is a diamond and a man's best friend is a dog. I've always wondered about that. But those diamonds are worth so much money, thousands upon thousands of dollars, because of rarity. Now think about this for a second. There's 7.5 billion people in the world today. I don't know how many have died. So, you know, maybe 10, 15 billion people have existed, but there is only one you. And it doesn't matter that your mother might have said when you were growing up, "When you grow up, I hope you have one just like you," because there's not going to be one. There is only one soul that is you. And that's what makes your soul valuable. Finally, the waste of a soul. What'll it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? If you gain the whole world, let me make a couple of points about gaining the whole world. Even if you could gain the whole world, well, and I'll just stop there, you wouldn't be able to. I looked up yesterday, again on my smartphone. The richest man in the world is Jeff Bezos. He created Amazon, and he's worth $131 billion. He's getting a divorce, and his wife is hoping that she'll get a lot of that, so he'll have less in the future. Bill Gates has $96 billion. Warren Buffett has 80-some-odd billion dollars. But even these men couldn't buy a piece of the world. You know, and even if you could own the whole world, you wouldn't be satisfied with it. God created us with a desire, not for material things, not for physical stuff, but for Him and for Him alone. Ultimately, only He can satisfy your soul. Now, some truths about losing your soul. The loss will be irreplaceable. You could go home today and find your house on fire. It's happened before. You can talk to Wanda and Ralph. You know, but chances are you've got homeowner's insurance. You could replace it. If you wreck your car today, and Lord willing you don't, probably got insurance on that too. You can replace it. And all of these other things. But if you lose your soul, it's irreplaceable. You can't get another. The loss will also be irreversible. Someday you'll die and ultimately you'll face the Lord. The Hebrews writer put in 9:27, it's appointed for men to die once, but after this the judgment. And the day after you die, you might change your mind and say, oh no, I really want to become a Christian now. But it'll be too late. Let me tell you plainly, if you want God's love and grace now, you can have it. If you want salvation now, you can have it. But if you wait until after you're gone, or until the Lord returns, you can't have either one of them. And the loss will be immeasurable. You know, you might lose an awful lot of things that you own. You might even lose family members that you love dearly. But if you lose your soul, you won't be able to measure how much it'll affect you. The loss will be inexcusable. God has given us passages like this one. And He's given us the whole Bible that it tells us, especially in the New Testament, to live according to His Word, to warn us, to make sure that we live the right way, because one of these days the time's going to come when we won't be able to do anything about it. There's a song that we sing, the words of which go this way, someday you'll stand at the bar on high. Someday your record you'll see. Someday you'll answer the question of life. What will your answer be? One of these days you'll see Jesus face to face. What sort of an excuse will you give Him for not living the way that you ought to? In closing, there's a battle that's going on right now. It's kind of like those, you remember those Looney Tunes cartoons? With Bugs Bunny and such, a little devil sitting up on his shoulder. Well, a devil is sitting on your shoulder right now, and he's telling you, you don't need to do anything right now. You've got plenty of time. There's no angel on the other shoulder. Instead, your family members and your friends and your loved ones are telling you, you need to get yourself right now. We don't want to lose you in eternity. And you don't know how much longer you're going to have. What's your answer? Who are you going to listen to? Are you going to listen to Satan? Are you going to listen to your family and friends? Are you going to listen to simple Christian common sense? All you have to do is respond to the invitation to put on Jesus in the waters of baptism after repenting of your sins, and then live your life in as close as in accordance with the Word as you possibly can. But if you wait, only time will tell. And it proves that Satan is in control of your life right now. If you need to respond to the invitation, for whatever reason, won't you come now while we stand and sing?